Thank you very much, Mr. Star Wars, and good afternoon, friends. I appreciated the message from Mr. Beatty, and our topics do not overlap. The news is often filled with incidents where the elderly are victims of scams or other crimes such as muggings or robberies, sometimes more unexplainably random punchings or knockovers. We have a sense of outrage whenever things like this occur, but especially when it happens to the elderly. Not only acts of violence against the elderly, our contemporary society, while celebrating the culture of youth and what's new or trendy, directly and subtly can marginalize and ignore the elderly. So what is the Christian's responsibility to the elderly? And how should we view the phase of life of being elderly, whether one is young or middle-aged or old? In this message, we will cover the topic of respecting the elderly from a biblical point of view, and you will see that this topic has a strong tie-in with other important relationships that we have. Respecting the elderly. Let's turn to Leviticus 19, please. Leviticus 19 and verse 32. Leviticus 19:32. And Leviticus 19:32 simply says, "You shall rise before the gray-headed and honor the presence of an old man and fear your God. I am the Lord." In the ESV version, it says, "You shall stand up before the gray head and honor the face of an old man and you shall fear your God. I am the Lord." The gray head obviously refers to someone who is of old age. And as we age, the pigment cells in our hair follicles gradually die off. They decrease in number. And so there's less to give your hair color. And so the strand of hair will be more like gray or silver or white. One can get a gray hair at any age, but this verse is referring to the elderly. And we are to honor the elderly and to show respect for them. Notice also that this command is connected with a command to fear God. So the two are related, intrinsically related. Respecting the elderly is related to respecting and fearing God. Now, in one sense, God is old, not in the human sense, since God has no beginning or end, but he has eternally existed. So he is older than any creature, seen or unseen. Let's turn to 1 Peter 5, verse 5. From an Old Testament scripture to the New. 1 Peter 5, verse 5. And 1 Peter 5, verse 5 says, "Likewise, you younger people, submit yourselves to elders. Yes, all of you be submissive to one another and be clothed with humility, for God resists the proud but gives grace to the humble." Now, the Greek word here for elder can mean one who is older in the community or one of the elders in the church. When you look at verses 1 through 4, it's clear that the office of a ministerial elder is primarily meant. But when you get to verse 5, seemingly there's a departure. And it says, "You younger people, submit yourself to elders." So in context, verse 5 is talking about both the elderly and the elders in the church. And Peter adds that we're all to be submissive to one another and to be humble, since we're all called by God's grace. So why should we honor the elderly? Well, the elderly have more experience and should have more wisdom. And this is discussed in the next three scriptures I'll turn to. Let's go to Proverbs 16, verse 31. Proverbs 16, verse 31. Proverbs 16, verse 31 says, "The silver-haired head is a crown of glory if it is found in the way of righteousness." So one's old age is a crown of glory even if one learns about God's way late in life, it is a blessing that God allowed a life of many years until the point where one's mind was opened and one was willing to learn. Proverbs 20, verse 29, just a couple pages over. Proverbs 20, verse 29. And it says, "The glory of young men is their strength, and the splendor of old men is their gray head." So it's not the dead pigment in the follicles that's truly the splendor. It's the acquired learning. It's the seasoned experience. It's the practical wisdom, a firm faith, and, as Mr. Beatty mentioned, the development of godly character. And over time, hopefully the elderly have learned that right balance, that blend of enthusiasm with wisdom, zeal with balance, passion with self-control. Now let's go to Job 12:12. Job is right before the Psalms. And in Job 12:12, it says, "Wisdom is with aged men, and with length of days understanding." And this was Job speaking. He understood that the elderly have much experience in learning from which wisdom can be drawn from. We can also observe that the elderly have sacrificed for their children and the younger generation in some way. They've contributed to society in different ways over a long period of time. They are worthy of respect in that regard. Another reason to honor the elderly is that throughout the Bible we are asked to consider and help those who are weak. Psalm 82 verse 3 says, "Defend the poor and fatherless. Do justice to the afflicted and the needy. Deliver the poor and needy. Free them from the hand of the wicked." And we know that so much Christian giving and philanthropy over centuries under the Christian umbrella has been done because of an understanding to uphold the weak. James 1:27 says that pure and undefiled religion before God is to visit orphans and widows in their trouble. And orphans and widows are two of the most vulnerable groups within society. Of course, many elderly are not physically weak, and they're not lacking the necessities of life. But the point is that we are to care for those who may not be as strong as they once were or cannot do as much as they once did. Let's go to 1 Timothy 5, 1-2. 1 Timothy 5, 1-2. This was guidance from Paul to a young minister named Timothy. And in 1 Timothy 5, 1-2, it says, 1 Timothy 5, verse 1, "Do not rebuke an older man, but exhort him as a father, younger men as brothers, older women as mothers, younger women as sisters, with all purity." The New Living Translation says, "Never speak harshly to an older man, but appeal to him respectfully as you would to your own father." So Paul's instruction to Timothy is that to an older man, you are not to rebuke, but you can approach, appeal, entreat, exhort him like a father. And this instruction is related to proper respect for an older person. There are other scriptures I could turn to about how the elderly are to be looked upon, but now I'd like to make a transition to a closely related topic, and that would be honoring our parents. And our parents, by definition, are older than we are. So our treatment and respect of the elderly should be an extension of honoring our parents. So let's turn to Exodus 20, verse 12, please. Exodus 20, verse 12. Of course, you know this as the chapter of the Ten Commandments. And in Exodus 20, verse 12, we have the fifth commandment as we number them. It says, "Honor your father and your mother." that your days may be long upon the land which the Lord your God is giving you. Now I'm going to ask you to turn one page to Exodus 21. And I'm going to read verses 15 and 17. So this is Exodus 21, verse 15. And he who strikes his father or his mother shall surely be put to death. Verse 17. And he who curses his father or his mother shall surely be put to death. You don't need to turn to Matthew 15, verse 4. But in that chapter, Jesus Christ referred to the fifth commandment. And he said, "For God commanded, saying," and he was speaking to Pharisees, "For God commanded, saying, honor your father and your mother, and he who curses father or mother, let him be put to death." So it's interesting that Christ quoted both from Exodus 20 and Exodus 21 to refer to this law. It's a separate question whether parents or the church should administer this law in the specific way of Exodus 21. The answer should be clear. Suffice to say, the answer is no. Parents nor the church have authority to put to death. And what you read in Exodus and Deuteronomy includes how this basic law was administered under the Old Covenant. The law today is not to be administered in the same way, since we're under the New Covenant. But the spiritual law to honor one's parents remains, and it takes upon deeper spiritual intent and meaning. And in Matthew 15, Christ was correcting the Pharisees in a situation where some of them had a blind spot respecting honoring their parents. Instead of providing needed aid to aging parents, they, in following a tradition of men and perhaps wanting the acclaim of men, prioritized giving to a discretionary temple fund rather than giving to their own parents in need. Let me turn to a few of the proverbs that talk about instruction regarding our parents. Let's go to Proverbs 1, verse 8. We're going to look at a number of proverbs. Proverbs 1, verse 8. It says, "My son, hear the instruction of your father, and do not forsake the law of your mother." Now let's go to chapter 4, verses 1 to 2. Proverbs 4, 1 to 2. "Hear, my children, the instruction of a father, and give attention to no understanding, for I give you good doctrine," or teaching. "Do not forsake my law." Proverbs 6:20. "My son, keep your father's command, and do not forsake the law of your mother." Let's go to 19:26. Proverbs 19:26. Proverbs 19:26 says, "He who mistreats his father and chases away his mother is a son who causes shame and brings reproach." Let's turn one page over to 20:20. Proverbs 20:20. "Whoever curses his father or his mother, his lamp will be put out in deep darkness." And finally, in the Proverbs, let's go to Proverbs 30, 11 through 14. Proverbs 30, verse 11. "There is a generation that curses its father and does not bless its mother. There is a generation that is pure in its own eyes, yet it is not washed from its filthiness. There is a generation, oh, how lofty are their eyes, and their eyelids are lifted up. There is a generation whose teeth are like swords and whose fangs are like knives, to devour the poor from off the earth and the needy from among men." And going to verse 17, "The eye that mocks his father and scorns obedience to his mother, The ravens of the valley will pick it out, and the young eagles will eat it. Going back to verse 14, it says, you know, not caring for one's parents may tie into a general unconcern for the poor or the needy, such that one might even prey upon them. So let's turn to Malachi 1:6. Malachi 1:6. Reading from Malachi 1:6, it says, "A son honors his father, and a servant his master. If then I am the father, where is my honor? And if I am master, where is my reverence, says the Lord of hosts, to you priests who despise my name? Yet you say, in what way have we despised your name?" So this is the Lord of hosts speaking through the prophet Malachi and saying he has the role of a father and master. And we know from the Bible as a whole that God has instituted things in the physical realm that are types of what is in the spiritual realm. For example, in the New Testament, especially in the epistles of Paul and in Revelation, we see how human marriage between one man and one woman is a model for the spiritual reality of Jesus Christ and the church. In the Old Testament, we see that the nation of Israel, or Judah, being talked about in type as being married to the Lord. In other words, being a bride to the Lord. And so with this verse in Malachi in the Old Testament, we see the Lord God saying to the priests and the nation that he is in a role of a father. So God uses the topology of husband and father in characterizing his relationship with human beings created in his image. So we've covered foundational law and principle of honoring one's parents at any age, and we want to avoid extremes. There are cultures in this world that have ancestor veneration or family religions as part of their practice, and that's wrong. We should only worship and venerate God. And sometimes we can focus on our parents so much to the exclusion of helping others. And here I'm not talking about the situation of special needs caregiving, which can be a full-time responsibility. But the principle of honoring our parents applies even when our parents are difficult to honor. It doesn't mean we obey our parents if it is in conflict with God's law, but it does mean we retain honor for them in their role. And there is some United Church of God literature that talks about observing the fifth commandment with parents who are difficult to honor, and honoring one's parents in the appropriate way is not conditioned on whether they were great parents. So we have covered how parents are to be honored according to the Bible. The Bible also says it's primarily the parents' responsibility to raise children in the way that they should go. And that does include proper respect for parents and people in general. I'm going to comment on one small piece of teaching of respect for those older. In many traditional societies, whether in the West or in the East, and that is for children to address adults not by first name as with one of their friends, but with a title fitting for that society. And perhaps Mr. or Mrs. or Miss in American culture works. In many cultures, again in the West or the East, and applicable to the Chinese background I have, I was to address the adult friends of my parents in their Chinese social circle as uncle or auntie. As a child, I would hear it from my parents if I did not or I forgot to say Uncle David or Auntie Ginger. Greeting adults by a mere hello was not sufficient, and using their first name only as a child would have been considered rude. And When it was detected that I had forgotten someone's name, my mom and dad would gently remind me or prompt me by saying, "You remember Uncle Kenneth, don't you?" And if I see those friends of my parents today, who may be in their 70s, 80s, or even 90s, I will still call them uncle or auntie, and not just by their first names. Now, as an adult, you can request that you be addressed in whatever way you wish. And so sometimes people will say, "You can call me Bill." But I would suggest that no adult give permission to a child to call him by his first name. And I do know parents who are not happy when an adult tells their young child that the child can address the adult by their first name, because they are teaching at home that child to address adults the right way. So the objective here is not rules for rules' sake. It's the opposite. It's guidance that teaches respect of others, especially the respect of adults by children. Before I leave the topic of honoring one's parents and transitioning back to respecting the elderly in general, I want to consider this question. In addition to being a major part of having a successful family life, what else does honoring one's parents accomplish? And let's go to 2 Timothy 3, 1 to 5 for that. 2 Timothy 3, 1 to 5. And in 2 Timothy 3, verse 1, it says, "But know this, that in the last days perilous times will come, for men will be lovers of themselves, lovers of money, boasters, proud, blasphemers, disobedient to parents, unthankful, unholy," going on to verse 3, "unloving, unforgiving, slanderers, without self-control, brutal, despisers of good, traitors, headstrong, haughty, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God, having a form of godliness but denying its power, and from such people turn away." So we see a hallmark of perilous times is when there's a critical mass of disobedience to parents. And in this list, it gets tied with other examples of bad character. And many of these bad characteristics in this list are tied to a disrespect of proper authority. So when a child does not obey parents, how do you expect that child to heed and be respectful to a teacher or a coach or a store manager or a principal or a security guard or a law enforcement person or positions of leadership in government and pastors? So respecting one's parents teaches respect for rightful authority. And a child will first learn about loving authority through mom and dad. And if the right example is set, the child learns about God through the eyes and teaching and example of the parents. Most importantly, a child in his early years should learn about the love of God through his parents. So honor your father and your mother. The fifth commandment is the first commandment after the first four commandments that are focused on love towards God. So I've talked a lot about the respect for the elderly. What should the elderly be doing? The Bible gives us a few passages. Let's look at Titus 2, 1 to 5. Titus chapter 2, 1 to 5. Right after Thessalonians. Nope, after Timothy. Titus chapter 2, verses 1 to 5. Titus 2, verse 1 says, "But as for you, speak the things which are proper for sound doctrine, that the older men be sober, reverent, temperate, sound in faith, in love, in patience, The older women likewise, that they be reverent in behavior, not slanderers, not given to much wine, teachers of good things, that they admonish the young women to love their husbands, to love their children, to be discreet, chaste, homemakers, good, obedient to their own husbands, that the word of God may not be blasphemed. So we have this mention of those older. Of course, it applies to the younger as well, but those older should be sober and reverent and self-controlled, faithful, loving, and patient. The older, with the wisdom that they've accumulated, can pass that understanding on through example and word. You remember our late friend Bill Braden, who was in this congregation, and he wrote articles and books aimed at young people in his later years, even when he was at the point of being legally blind, in an attempt to pass on wisdom. Let's go to 1 Timothy 5:3-5. 1 Timothy 5:3-5. And in 1 Timothy 5:3, it says, honor widows who are really widows. And you're asking, what does really widow mean? Well, it means a widow who is in need, or let's say who's alone and does not have family. That's the context here. Verse 4. But if any widow has children or grandchildren, let them first learn to show piety at home and to repay their parents, for this is good and acceptable before God. So the primary responsibility of taking care of a widow goes first to one's children and grandchildren. Verse 5, now she who is really a widow and left alone trusts in God and continues in supplications and prayers day and night. So the widow can pray. And of course, the widower can pray. Of course, any person should be praying. But this would also apply, let's say, to someone who doesn't have a full-time occupation anymore. Perhaps there is more time to pray. Let's also look at Psalm 92:12-14 for more of what an older person can do. Psalm 92:12-14. And in Psalm 92:12, it says, the righteous shall flourish like a palm tree. He shall grow like a cedar in Lebanon. Those who are planted in the house of the Lord shall flourish in the courts of our God. They shall still bear fruit in old age. They shall be fresh and flourishing to declare that the Lord is upright. He is my rock. There is no unrighteousness in him. So the elderly, with God's help, should still be bearing fruit. They may not bear fruit in the same way that they did 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago, let's say with more physical strenuous activity, but they can be fruitful in other ways. Let's look at Psalm 71. Psalm 71, and we'll look at verses 8 to 9. And Psalm 71, verse 8 says, let my mouth be filled with your praise and with your glory all the day. Verse 9, do not cast me off in the time of old age. Do not forsake me when my strength fails. And going to verse 18, now also when I am old and gray-headed, O God, do not forsake me. Until I declare your strength to this generation, your power to everyone who is to come. So sometimes the elderly can feel a little depressed because they perceive they cannot do as much anymore or have lost strength and energy. The psalmist here prays that he will not be forsaken or forgotten. And people can feel this way. So it's good to cry out to God and express when we're not feeling as useful or productive, or we're feeling forsaken. And in turn, God may show us new ways to be useful and productive and connected to others. Let's also read Isaiah 46, verse 4. We have an encouraging verse here. Isaiah chapter 46, verse 4. And Isaiah 46, verse 4 says, "Even to your old age, I am He. And even to your gray hairs, I will carry you. I have made and I will bear. Even I will carry and I will deliver you." So God watches out for us into our advanced years, and in turn, we should do what we can as we are able to pass on wisdom and understanding. And of course, there's no shortage of examples in the Bible how God worked with people as they progressed to advanced age, whether it be a Noah or Abraham and Sarah, Moses and Aaron, Joshua, Caleb, Samuel. Daniel was worked with into his late years. Anna the prophetess and John the apostle into his late years. Certainly God works with you, the elderly person, as you interact and serve your family, serve your neighbors, those around you, and the church, and as you pray and study and meditate. There are also some instructions that are directed to parents in the Bible, but they can be applied to the elderly and all of us in general. With respect to fathers, Ephesians 6:4 says, you don't need to turn there, Ephesians 6:4 says, "And you fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath, but bring them up in the training and admonition of the Lord." The NIV translation says, "Do not exasperate your children." Colossians 3:21 says, and you don't need to turn there, "Fathers, do not provoke your children, lest they become discouraged." The NIV translation says, "Do not embitter your children, lest they be discouraged." So likewise to the elderly, with grandchildren or younger people, do not exasperate them, do not embitter them. Certainly things can be said about the negative trends and the negative conditions in today's world, but a young person does not want to hear constantly about what is wrong and negative in their world and how great things were when you were a kid. Instead, help that young person to find out what is good and positive in their lives and encourage them in that while noting the problems that do exist in today's world. Now, how can children or the young or the younger respect the elderly in general, within the church and without? Well, these ideas are nothing new. They're very basic. Greet them by name and mention your name if it's a first contact or if the older person has forgotten your name. Listen to them. Talk to them. You may have to go to them rather than them coming to you. Have meals with them. Help them with physical tasks that they may not be able to do themselves. Give them time and assistance. Visit when possible. And younger person, if you're talking to an older person and they refer to a famous person or event from the past that you do not recognize, ask them about it. And likewise, the older person, if you hear the younger person talking to you, refer to a current celebrity or a technology or a trend that you don't know about, ask them about it. Asking shows you're interested. And also younger people, in talking to older persons, you may have to, in some cases, apply more patience because there are factors of poor hearing or impaired eyesight. There can be differing degrees of dementia, other impairments due to age. So those who talk very quickly may have to slow down a little bit in those situations. As I near the close, I read at the beginning the passage from Leviticus. You shall stand up before the gray head and honor the face of an old man. You shall fear your God. I am the Lord. So the command to honor is clear, and the intention of rising or standing up is tied to that attitude of honor and respect. The question I want to pose is, does this mean that we are to literally stand up each and every time an older person enters the room? My judgment would be no. The intent of the verse is on an overall attitude. And we could make the judgment that there are many situations where it would be disruptive and not expected for all to stand in the presence of the elderly. But there are many other cases where, in addition to having the right attitude, the gesture can be done with appropriateness and grace and appreciation. So now I'll give you a personal viewpoint. From a biblical reference and from an innate human sense, standing up for someone else is a sign of respect. I want to use one example. One of my bosses in my career is a man about 15 years older than me. And years ago, after we had both started working for different employers, we would occasionally get together for dinner at a restaurant to catch up and to talk about the normal networking in the industry. In the times that he would get there first, he would get a table and sit down. And when I arrived, I walked to the table, and he would immediately stand up, greet me, and shake my hand. We're talking about formerly a boss. We're talking about someone 15, 20 years older than me. And I'll just add, he has rheumatoid arthritis as well. But I clearly remember that physical gesture of standing up that says, I welcome you. Great to see you. Going back earlier than that, when we were in the same group and he was not yet my boss, as any group at work might do, you interview candidates for an open position, and typically the candidate had an interview, a separate interview, with every member of the group, one after another. And I remember times that I would interview the candidate and bring him to my former boss's office because he was the next person on the schedule, and he would always stand up as a sign of respect to greet the candidate. There were others who merely stayed seated and asked the candidate to sit down in the chair. He gave me the example of standing up. So it's a wonderful gesture to apply to the elderly. Again, not a physical requirement in every situation, but a wonderful gesture that reflects the attitude of Leviticus 19:32, an attitude that we must have. So I would want God's help to honor the elderly for all the reasons that I've talked about from the Bible. And in our lives, we can counter the trend in society to marginalize or ignore the elderly. And how we respect the elderly has a tie-in on how we honor God and our parents. The elderly who have walked God's way for years are a resource of wisdom that we can access.